T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Whoa, WTIC, Friday afternoon. Friday before the election. What an incredible thing it is that this election is happening. We get to be here for it. This is big time history. Donald J. Trump, the most outrageous, exciting, perhaps the finest president we've lived through. And his re-election moment is coming up after 5 years of endless barrage of being victimized by the mainstream media in cahoots with the deep state, trying to just funnel negativity and hatred on him day in and day out. And what other human being could have survived it and even thrived under it, because he is such a unique creature with such a unique devotion to advancing America and to sense of right and wrong. You know, one of the things I hate, one of the things that's awful about having media that only wants to push a single message from a single perspective all day long, every day for years, is all the other messages that don't get out, all the other information that isn't shared, all the other thoughts that aren't entertained, the other ways of looking at things, like my way. Who talks about my way? Who mentions your way of looking at things in a national newscast or in a publicly funded TV or radio station, in a newspaper? It's not there. It's just this one thing day in and day out. This is a horrible thing to do to the country, and it starves us of the intellectual nutrition that we need in order to function properly. It's a terrible thing. Someday we will be able to see it all clearly, but in the midst of it, it just looks like a war with all kinds of shrapnel falling. It's hard to have clarity and to understand just how badly we're being mistreated by this whole game that's being played on us. 860-522-9842. Oh! James is coming up next. That's exciting. Well, we've got some great regular guests on Friday, and one of them is 12-year-old James, seventh grader, smart guy, politically engaged, and with a curious mind. James, welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me on the show, Todd. I'm here to talk about why I believe that herd immunity is not a strategy that should be used to help handle COVID-19.
Really? This is exciting. I've been dying to have a good conversation about herd immunity. Why is it not an appropriate way to think about how to stop this thing?
Well, first we need to realize that the reason why COVID-19 would not work with it is because it belongs to the coronavirus genus. This would also include SARS, their variations. So, think of it this way. The coronaviruses are related to rhinoviruses, which does include the common cold. People can get the common cold and influenza multiple times during their life. They'll catch it again. Although influenza and the cold cannot cause heart attacks, influenza and the cold do not cause blood coagulation problems. So relative in some areas might not actually be as dangerous to coronaviruses. So COVID-19 in particular, like I said, can cause blood coagulation problems. So you know that it can put many people at risk. So people that might be overweight or people that just have type 1 diabetes will be at high risk because they can get heart attacks and strokes. And also, when you catch COVID once, you can catch it again. There's evidence of this. And they're also symptomatic, non-asymptomatic.
Wait, say that part again?
COVID-19, you can catch it once, recover, catch it again, and be symptomatic again, too.
Oh, but that we don't know. I mean, there's some evidence around the edges, but we don't really know how it behaves in terms of immunity as of yet, right? And you're talking right. about you're talking about coronaviruses. So the common cold, it seems to me you can get a common cold constantly. There is no immunity, whereas there is immunity that you get to the flu, but the flu mutates so quickly, and there's so many different strains of it that you can be getting a different one, but there is immunity. That's why we do have a vaccination for the flu. So isn't there some unknown about this, too, with regard to COVID, what the norm will be over time for how long resistance lasts to it?
And here's where my second point comes in here. The very idea of herd immunity, assuming every viral disease, you eventually get immunity to it after you catch it. You, by very nature of just exposing a bunch of people to it, will cause deaths that could have been caused, that could have been prevented by using other treatments.
Well, possibly. And we certainly are getting better at the treatments. But we do have to weigh this. So this is the problem to me, James, and I don't want to get you off your topic, so tell me to stop or just pull back if you want to. But it seems to me the problem here is that in order to properly fight a virus that we know is going to be a long term, so we're 9 months into it, we know it's going to be here a year, maybe it'll be here a year and a half, maybe it'll be 2 years, maybe it'll be 3 years. It's a long term fight. The only way we can maintain that fight over the long term is to not shut down our society in response to it, but instead to shut down the vulnerable populations, to do a good job of protecting them. And that way, as much normal life as possible can go along producing the things that we need to survive so we can fight the virus. Therefore, it's not just about fighting the virus. It's about also maintaining the economy. Those two things both have to be maximized.
Okay, so I agree with you on the no total shutdown. And this actually goes into a little bit of research I've been doing about social ending and scientific ending.
What does that mean?
So social ending is when society as a whole starts to stop thinking of it as some sort of massive threat they need to fix. And a scientific ending is when the viral disease itself is completely eradicated or has such well treatments that is no longer a threat.
Social ending is about having an attitude of perseverance and also integrating in certain methodologies that we're learning to minimize the impact. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. And actually, SARS has never had a scientific ending, but that does not mean SARS is a massive threat that will end society as a whole. We have had a social ending to that. H1N1 would be another example of this. Although, yes, H1N1 and SARS do not have the same capabilities as COVID-19, I think they could be benchmarks to what we could be doing with COVID-19.
James, hold your thought for a moment so I can do a weather update, and then we will continue our conversation with young James, a regular guest here, and as you can tell, a fascinating young thinker. Okay, James, what else can you tell us?
Another thing I also want to talk about, I want to talk about mask mandates and total shutdowns. Total shutdowns will be bad. Because as you have seen in areas where there were total shutdowns, the economy went down with it. Though the total shutdowns have been slightly evident of lowering the curve and flatlining it, it has also hurt the economy. What a lot of people want to bring up is the fact that it will hurt the economy more than it will hurt people medically. And you know what I say to that? I completely agree with
saying?
That. And I just want to get it out there that so that people am aware that I am against total shutdowns.
The other issue that I think it's important to keep in mind with regard to these government actions is the whole concept of America. And I know that you have, at least you indicate signs of having kind of a libertarian streak in you. The idea that you give power to, that you accept the idea of a governor like Governor Lamont making policy with regard to this kind of thing, I think it requires that you forget about the big threat that government represents to human rights, individual rights, and the idea of individual liberty that our system is based on. So our founders were driven by an understanding that one of the most destructive forces, maybe the most destructive force in the history of mankind, has been government. And they wanted to try to figure out how to solve the challenge of creating a government without creating a monster that would destroy the human rights, the God-given rights that it was looking to institutionalize as something that, as creating a line that government didn't have the right to transgress. So here we are with a governor in the state of Connecticut now who has claimed 11 months of emergency powers, 11 months of him getting to do a daily press conference that everybody pays attention to, and him being the almost universal flow of information, him making a statewide shutdown while you have one county that's got 1,500 deaths and another one at the other end of the spectrum that has 14 deaths, and realizing that he's making one policy for across the board, the big to the small, in terms of where the problems are. And is he doing that because that's the best decision for us? Or is he doing that because that's the safest thing for him? Because you know what he's talking about, James, when he's sitting around with his advisors, right? They're talking about, how do I do this so that I get elevated in terms of how people view me? They're impressed with how I handle myself, but I don't make any mistakes that makes it look like I made the mess of this thing, not the disease. And it seems to me as soon as you start going down that path where you're giving that power back to the government, one is you may never get it back. Look at how Ned's almost got us to a year of emergency for something he should have stopped months ago. And let me just back up again to that Windham County 14 deaths that sat stable all through the summer. Windham County could have been open. It could have been generating income. It could have been preparing for the long haul by letting people make some money and let some businesses put some money away and maybe survive longer. Because if there's going to be more shutdowns now, imagine the economic tragedy, having had counties like Windham that could have been open, not allowed to open all that time. Sorry to give such a long speech, but I wanted to get that out there.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I agree with you that a total shutdown is bad, but with the where you said that he has 11 months of, what was it, emergency powers, I believe?
Emergency powers, yes. He has declared himself the king for 11 months.
Here's what I think about that. With those emergency powers, I don't think it's the powers themselves that are the problem, but rather he who's holding it. Ned Lamont, from what I've seen, seems like extremely uneducated. I'm trying to sugarcoat it here. With what he's doing, I believe he has an extremely hard time trying to handle it. So he does. He goes all out, does everything he can. He tries to lock it down because he thinks that might help. And now we have an economic crisis. He believes that he should handle medical over economic. So what he's doing is he does what he thinks will help society the most by just plunging the economy just so we can close down the state. That's what I believe he's doing.
So, and how do you view that?
As a knee-jerk reaction.
You view it unfavorably.
Yes, because that what he should have done is not, usually I tend to side with scientists over economists. It's just how my nature is. But in something mm-hmm. like this, where the economy affects people so much when it plunges, I believe they should have a equally loud voice to the scientists.
They being the politicians or the economists?
Economists.
Okay, but the job of a political process is not to listen, as in do what they say, not to listen to the scientists, and not to do what the economists say, but to sit there and integrate all the information and viewpoints that those specialists can provide, and then make a decision that integrates all of the needs of the people, which also includes you protecting the constitutional rights of the people and making sure the system of government sustains. What Jolly Ned is doing is trampling all over those things, and he clearly is paying no consistent attention to any set of principles that he claims. At the beginning, he claimed it was all science. Now he's contradicting the last few weeks his own principles as he laid them out for us, and going against that science and looking to continue reopening the state at a time when he's warned us, you should be very careful. What's that all about? You know, so then you've got the political process where the governor is working alone as a king. He's shut the legislature out of the process for the larger part of a year, and it's not good.
He's flip-flopping.
Well, he is, but he's also violating the premise of America, and that is that we don't have kings. We don't have a guy who's got all the power in his own hands, and all he has to do is sign his name to a piece of paper, and that automatically becomes law. That is an insidious, dangerous thing. Agree or disagree, James?
I agree, and that's why we have the veto system, which I'm surprised hasn't been used as much as I thought it would be. Because with the veto system, I thought what I expected was that when the Senate disagrees with what the governor does, they would push back. But the problem is they don't do that, even when the Senate does unanimously disagree. Because in the early days of President Trump, I remember researching that quite a bit of the Republicans that were in the Senate did not like him from the start, at least. They did not like him. I'm surprised they didn't veto most of his things, because the Democrats did not like
yeah,
him.
Yeah, you're going off into a whole different territory that is fascinating, but we don't have time for right now. But, James, you are incredible, and I love talking to you. Thank you so much for being here again. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
The elderly.
Yes, sir, and have a great weekend. James is awesome, isn't he? All right, stay with us. We're going to talk to Justin Anderson running for Congress coming up right now. Traffic. Mark Christopher in the Brown, Payne, Harrison Scott Traffic Center. He's keeping an eye on things. Messy roads could get clogged as the afternoon goes on. What's showing a problem right now for us, Mark?
You know, when James is a huge authority across the United States, they're going to be playing audio when he was 12 years old,
yes,
from the Todd Feinberg show. That's going to be very cool.
That's
to listen
my
to.
Shot at fame right there.
There you go. There's your ticket.
WTIC, thank you so much for being here. Friday, love Fridays. Joining us right now, Justin Anderson, running for Congress, 2nd Congressional District, that massive thing that takes up like 3/4 of the Connecticut from the right. Well, I'm exaggerating, but it's amazing. Justin, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's actually geographically, I guess, half the state.
How do you campaign in such a huge area? All you see is trees.
Yeah, every day. You got to drive around every single day, sir.
All right, so give us a quick hit on what your position is. What is the compelling statement you make to people to get them to understand why they need to support you?
Well, there's a lot of change going on right now, throughout the country. I don't think as a whole Connecticut or the nation as a whole wants to see like police defunded. They don't want to see these continuous protests. Security is a big issue. And also COVID-19 is a big issue. So we got to get out of here. We got to do it safely. So I'm all for that. I don't want to go into too much detail and stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that we can be doing to make sure that, we keep the police funded. We got to keep, security for the individuals, and we got to make sure that people are, economically safe, through a good economy. And I think the current administration already seeing an uptick. So I think that's, right around the corner is a good economy. So this is actually looking good. I'll tell you what, there's actually right now the enthusiasm, not just for the Trump campaign, but for, my campaign. I think it's I'm getting some lead off onto my own campaign. It's there's a lot of enthusiastic people out there ready to vote. So I think this is going to be a historic, historic election, especially in the Eastern Connecticut.
So you're feeling a lot of excitement on behalf of average voters. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. It's unbelievable.
Justin, how do people find you if you want them to? What do you want them to do? Go to your website? Do you need the money from people? You need votes? What is it you're after?
It all comes down to votes. Votes is number one. If you don't have any money, just get out there and vote, because in the end, all the money goes towards trying to secure a vote. The reality is, most of my stuff is put out there on Facebook, and that's at Justin Anderson. Facebook, and also there's JustinAndersonForCongress.com. You can look me up on the website, and I have a pretty good background. Last time I was on your show, we discussed quite a bit about that. 30 years in the military, 20 years in the DOC, so I have a pretty good background. I have a lot of experience, and I want to take that to Washington D.C. with everybody's help.
All right. Well, Justin, thank you for. We just got a brief hit here for you, but we appreciate you coming on and reminding people who you are and reminding them about how important it is that they be activated and engaged in this election. So thanks for being here. And a Monday at 3, we're doing a candidate hour. If you want to call in, just call in and be on the, we'll just go through all the candidates who are on hold on Monday at 3 o'clock. All right. Thank you for that. Rob Sampson coming up next. Well, I don't know where he's been. All I can tell you is I've missed him. He is the beacon of liberty emanating from the General Assembly in Hartford. Rob Sampson, State Senator from Wolcott. How are you, sir?
I am well, Todd, and the feeling is very mutual. Sorry, I've been very busy running a campaign and trying to preserve liberty in Connecticut.
Yeah, you have a vigorous challenger from what I hear, somebody who's working hard and is using all kinds of not so ethical standards and approaches to representing your positions. Is that right?
Indeed. It's like physics, Todd. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So the louder you are speaking in defense of American freedom and our system of government, the more likely you are to have detractors trying to bring you down. And my opponent is very aggressive and very negative. But I think we're in good shape. I feel confident about the race, and I know I've done a good job. And I have more grassroots support than I've ever had before. And I think that has a lot to do with my appearances on WTIC. And thank you very much for your support over the last couple of years and your defense of liberty and new direction for Connecticut.
So when you how many campaigns have you run now? What number is this for you total?
I had to be in a primary the very first time I ran in 2010. And then I've run in the general election. This will be my sixth time, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're good at this, and you spanned a period of time, which is what I wanted to get at, so that you can compare. You said the energy is really good right now. What is different right now, and through the years, give us a little context of what your experience has taught you about what you can expect in an election, what it feels like, and how this is different.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the number one thing is the division in the country continues to grow every election cycle. And I have felt it noticeably increase every time. And it's about as bad as it gets. And during that same period of time, social media has also expanded its impact. In 2010, when I first ran simultaneous with Governor Malloy, by the way, certainly not in support of him. Social media was in its infancy. People had a Facebook account, but there was not a lot of politics going on. There was not a lot of advertising. Mm-hmm. but that has increased over the years, and so has this tremendous division between the political parties and the lack of respect for people who have differing opinions. And if there's any one thing that I try and do in my office and in my campaigns, aside from actually debating and voting on policy, it is to try and instill in people respect for different ideals.
So how does that thing manifest itself? Are you saying that an average person who is of a different political persuasion from you, that they come at you with you personally with hostility, or it's more what you see going on back and forth between voters?
Yeah, I don't think it's something that affects the majority of the population. I think the vast majority of people are paying some attention to the election, but they are not completely on one team or the other and willing to go to battle. But the people that are on both sides, and you can use Trump as a perfect example, there are people that are pro-Trump no matter what. He can do no wrong. And especially if you're a Republican candidate and you second guess something that Trump did on a given day, you'll get a lot of heat from your own side. And then, of course, there are people that despise Trump no matter what. And I just wish that more people were simply objective about it, to say, well, I'm voting for Trump. I support Trump, but he makes mistakes. And, I don't care for Governor Lamont. I think the direction he's taken the state is completely wrong, but he's made some decent moves also. He's right 10% of the time, but wrong 90%. If we can get people to be a little more objective about each individual issue and on a day-to-day basis, I think we'd be a lot more respectful of one another.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but then you get into this narrative conflict where how do you support somebody who during that 10% of the time that they're doing the right thing, they can't begin to compensate for the philosophical underpinnings that you find offensive that drive the 90% of what they do. It's a really hard thing to deal with on an individual level.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but it has become so visceral, and it amounts to hatred. It amounts to real, live, strong emotions. I was in a car parade this past weekend. Maybe 75 or 100 people gathered to go on a back the blue, pro-Trump, pro-Republican car parade. And while everyone was staging and putting flags and things on their cars, there was a car driving by the staging area back and forth. It would go by one way and scream some profanities, F Trump out the window, and then they'd go back the other way. And then ultimately, when we actually pulled out of the parking lot onto the road, this car weaved around a bunch of parked vehicles to interrupt our parade and actually got right in front of me and started to slow down to break up our progress.
Wow.
I mean, it's
that's crazy
that it has reached this kind of proportion. I can't even imagine that happening 10 years ago when I first ran for state office.
No, it is nuts. We're talking to Rob Sampson, state senator. Hang on, Rob. Let me do a weather forecast here and we'll continue the conversation. So, Rob, this has been a very unusual year in terms of Ned declaring himself king, the lack of normal political process, while incredibly serious decisions for the future of the state are being made by one person who can issue those decisions as law with his signature. How do you feel about what's going on? What can you tell us about how people inside of the General Assembly view this period of time?
Sure. Just to finish the previous point, which is related to this one, which is the problem I have with this visceral dislike that people have for one another on the subject of politics, it means it's so hard for people to talk to one another. It used to be that you could maybe get through to someone. You're a Democrat. Okay, I'm a Republican candidate, but let us have a conversation. Maybe we can find some common ground, and you can maybe work your way towards earning a vote. I don't know that happens as much as it used to. I think that people who are determined to be on one team or the other are very unlikely to be swayed. And maybe that's respects, but it's also it's stopping polite conversation.
Well, but if they don't bring their minds to it, there are people who vote Democrat who are following a legacy, maybe a family legacy of voting Democrat that goes back 50, 60, 70 years. And they've never confronted fully all of the implications of what that means. And they haven't even noticed that the word Democrat and the word Republican, may represent in many different areas a whole different set of opinions and outlooks than what they are assuming the word means. So it's important to converse so we can realize that these divisions don't actually belong to us. Those belong to the political parties. And we might, inside of those umbrellas and those facades and those brands, want to configure something different for ourselves.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's how I got elected the very first time, is I ran in a conservative Democrat district, which is something that really doesn't even exist anymore. And I won by going door to door and convincing a lot of senior citizens, a lot of Kennedy Democrats, that, you know, Barack Obama is not their guy and that they really ought to take a look at the Republican Party. And I attribute that to my very first victory and the overall swing of the district that I represent from blue to red over the last 10 years.
You mean there's been movement in terms of the general consensus in your Senate district?
Oh, absolutely. Well, in my state rep district, which I held for four terms, I defeated someone, a Democrat who had served for five terms before me, who beat mm-hmm. his last Republican challenger 90% to 10%. An unbelievable margin. So to say that my district was a Republican district, you could never say that. And I won my first race by 45 votes by outworking my opponent, who took it for granted because he thought he had such an advantage. But over time, even the registrations have gone from a majority Democrat district to a majority Republican district. And I won't.
And do you think that's
entire 16th? I mean, Joe Markley deserves a lot of that credit, along with my help in the part that we shared.
Okay, but you think it does have to do with you guys as a unit representing a different belief system and updating people's perceptions of what Republican means?
I absolutely believe that. And if there's one thing wrong with the Republican Party in Connecticut, is that they fail across our state. Republican candidates and elected officials fail to carry the banner for our belief system. They tend to go along to get along. They do not even point out the different views that we have or why the Republican way is better. There are parts of this state, Fairfield, for instance, where most of the Republicans that are elected to office are really Democrat-like, and that is a real shame. There are some exceptions, though, by the way. My friend Kimberly Fiorello is running for state representative in the seat that once held by Livy Florin, and Ellie Koussidis is running against the majority leader, Bob Duff. These are two super strong and solid Republicans in Fairfield County that people should support. And my friend Joe Laporta in Madison, who is outstanding, and he will be my 34-2 vote if it ends up being like that in the Senate.
Well, I hope that you're in a strong position after this election, because we need to have a two-party system in the state. And I think that's part of the reason that, you know, you were talking about how Republicans don't articulate the Republican perspective in a way that they can be attracting new people to the fold. And I think part of the reason they don't is they feel so outnumbered that they're afraid of being ganged up on and misrepresented and facing a barrage of disinformation about what it means to believe in the American system of government.
Right. Our candidates either don't believe in that system to begin with, or if they do, they are convinced that Connecticut is just a blue state and we can't win. So we've got to moderate our message. And I disagree. I think freedom is the most powerful message that has ever existed. I think it was good enough to declare independence from Great Britain and give us the great country that we have. I think it's enough to win a state rep or a state senate race in Connecticut, because we have a clear contrast in the direction that we are going to go in this country. And that contrast exists in every state legislative seat as well. The Republican candidate is on the side of freedom and opportunity and less government. And the Democrats want more socialism, more big government, and more interference with the decision making in your personal life. You couldn't come up with a more stark contrast. And we need Republican candidates to make the case for why our way is better.
All right, Rob Sampson, how do people find you online?
I have a website. It is www.sampson4ct.com. That's F-O-R-C-T.com. Please come visit me and support me on Election Day.
Okay, and Facebook as well. You're active on Facebook, right?
Oh, yes. You cannot miss me on Facebook. Just look for State Senator Rob Sampson.
All right. Thank you, sir. Good luck. Great to talk with you once again. And, yeah, good luck on Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Todd. Take it easy.
All righty. Rob Sampson, State Senator from Wolcott. Sampson4CT.com. Com. Check him out. Good guy. For me, it's the notions of liberty, the straight line. This is what I look for in a candidate. The straight line that you can draw from the Constitution and the principles of the founding documents of this country straight through the belief system that's expressed by that candidate. And it's really simple. You know, we get frustrated sometimes trying to figure out how to make sure that the people we're voting for are the people who we think we're seeing. And if you ask of candidates that they articulate for you these types of viewpoints, do you believe in, or what do you believe in? I guess you shouldn't lead the witness at all, but you should ask, tell us your beliefs. What is it you believe about government? Should it be big or should it be small? Right there. Boy, there's a question that will get you a ton of information that will be valuable for you, because I think a lot of Republicans are afraid to actually say that they're small government people for fear they might be targeted. Seriously. Okay, a reminder, candidates, Monday during the 3 o'clock hour, we're just going to have the phone lines open for candidates to call in and make a pitch for themselves, a last pitch. Candidates of all persuasions call during the 3 o'clock hour on Monday, and we'll get you on the air as best we can and let you do a 1 minute pitch or what have you. Okay?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.